it was the first time I had ever heard that you could get a degree in winemaking. And I said, that's for me.
Robert Parker has established himself as a critical reviewer with an acute palate. I'm just wondering where that female is.
The wine industry is addicting. It draws you back.
To me, the romance is in the glass, and it's when you're done with the bottle.
And we would spend our summer afternoons swimming in the irrigation pond for 3 to 4 hours a day.
Even though it's tough work, nobody said it would ever be easy. You know, we do it as a family.
In the final analysis, somebody's going to pop the cork, and they're either going to like the wine or they're not going to like the wine.
Since I made Cabernet all my life at Behringer, I buy Cabernet, so should never let a winemaker own their own winery.
We were either going back to Switzerland to go to hotel school, or we were going to come to California. We had to get closer to the vineyard thing.
It's like when you go to one of those winemaker dinners where the winemaker doesn't quite get that not everyone is telling jokes about the acid level in the wine all night.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 99. This week we feature Steve Fennell, winemaker for Sanford Winery, located in Santa Barbara County. Sanford Winery is located in Santa Barbara County, well known for great wine and interesting climates. Steve Fennell is the winemaker and general manager for Sanford. Steve paid a visit to the Life Between the Vines studios during a midsummer wine tour. Steve is one of those winemakers that not only brings passion to a wine discussion, but excitement and contagious enthusiasm as well. Well, Steve, welcome to Milwaukee. How you doing?
Thanks, Ray. I'm doing very well.
I should actually introduce you before I go to that. I'm here with Steve Fennell. And Steve, you are the winemaker as well as general manager of Sanford Winery, correct?
Exactly. In beautiful Santa Barbara County, California.
Fabulous. Well, welcome to Milwaukee. Cheers.
Thanks, Ray. Good to be here.
Well, and I guess before we start talking all the details and the dirt, no pun intended, we've got some Chardonnay, I believe, in front of us, right?
We certainly do. We have our 2010 Santa Rita Hills Chardonnay, which is a blend of our two estate vineyards right in the heart of the Appalachian. Very cool climate. Very traditional winemaking, sort of inspired by the great white Burgundies. Great acidity, barrel fermented, lots of structure, very complete and age-worthy wine. Sort of atypical for what people think of as California Chardonnay. Our region is truly different.
Oh, my, that's yummy. Nice body, great finish.
Thanks. Yeah, our area is, it really is remarkable because, you know, we're in the southern half of the state, being in Santa Barbara County. So we have mild winters, but we have a very cool growing season because we're coastal. We're very close to the ocean. So for us, a warm day in July or August is 75 degrees Fahrenheit, and then it plummets down to usually the high 40s or low 50s at night. So it makes for a very long growing season, so we retain this beautiful acidity. So even with barrel fermenting, they still have really nice, bright flavors.
And you have obviously the totally crazy concept of the mountains that actually go east to west versus coastal north-south type mountains, correct?
Exactly. It's a benefit from the San Andreas Fault. It's tweaked that part of California. So, you know, just up the coast from Los Angeles, it juts out to the west. And there's actually a point just northwest of us, Point Conception, where the coastline goes from east to west and then bends around and goes to the north again. So we actually have the coast on both sides of us. From the vineyard, due south is the ocean, and straight west is the ocean as well.
So completely unique.
Absolutely unique. It makes for very different weather patterns.
Yeah, I'll bet. I mean, is that a weather pattern that makes you crazy, or do you find that advantageous for what you're trying to do? Obviously, well known for the wine, but
yeah, it's actually great for the vineyard and the wines. It makes it a pretty breezy place. A lot of the afternoons, we get more than a gentle breeze. It can be downright windy. So it's not always the best place to live. So I actually live in the town of Santa Barbara, which is a little more protected because that just faces south to the ocean. So it's a little sheltered. But it's absolutely spectacular region to grow grapes.
So just get an idea for you to go to work. How long of a drive are you looking at?
I live about 53 miles from the winery.
Okay, so that's a healthy jog.
It's a bit of a drive, but almost no traffic, and I get some work done while driving, and I find it good thinking time. You know, and it's one of those rare times that you can actually be sort of by yourself and have your thoughts, and good for planning the day and that sort of thing.
Are these classic mountain roads, or?
About half and half right along the coastline. So it's pretty scenic both ways, looking at the ocean or a nice twisty drive down Santa Rosa Road to the winery.
Not a bad place to live.
Not at all.
Nice.
Or work.
So let's talk about Sanford. A little bit of history, if you would, when Sanford started up and where everything came from.
Sure. It's actually a long and I find pretty interesting history. Originally, Richard Sanford and Michael Benedict were friends and partners in the late 60s and had the crazy idea of planting a very cool climate vineyard in an area that was previously unplanted. And conventional wisdom was such that it was too cool of an area to grow vinifera wine grapes of any sort. And Michael Benedict was actually inspired. He looked at the remnants of a historic vineyard that was actually out on one of the Channel Islands. So off the coast of Santa Barbara, there's a series of islands out in the channel that also have the east-west orientation. And the largest of them, Santa Cruz Island, actually had a vineyard in the middle of it in the 19th century. And they grew grapes and made wines out there. And supposedly they were some of the best wines made in California at that time. And it was believed to be due to this unique geography and the resulting weather. So when Richard and Michael were looking for, a similar place, but at that point the island was it's a preserve, so you can't really plant out there anymore. They looked at the part of the San Ynez Valley where we are, the western part now known as the Santa Rita Hills, that had that similar climate with a valley opening directly to the ocean. So planted a mix of varieties. Fortunately, and this was 1971, they planted Sanford and Benedict. In an area, 10 miles west of Highway 101, no vineyards around. They were told by UC Davis that they were crazy. It was too cold to plant anything out there, certainly not anything red. They planted a range of varieties, but the Pinot Noir and Chardonnay were standouts. And that inspired other producers to plant, but I believe it was more than a decade before anybody else planted. And now that original vineyard is the center of the Santa Rita Hills, and that's really what inspired and where literally vineyards grew up around it. So they were partners, and then they split in around 1980, and then Sanford Winery began. So before that, there was actually Sanford and Benedict Winery, and I've had the pleasure of tasting some of the old vintages from the late 70s, and I can say the Pinot Noirs actually are still holding quite well. So it was a good example of the ageability of Santa Rita Hills Pinot. And then with Sanford Winery, it's been Chardonnay and Pinot Noir ever since. Now we have two vineyards, again, right at the heart of the Appalachian. Second vineyard, La Rinconada, planted in 97. So it's been this history with sort of evolving players in terms of partners, but the soil remains. And I think at the end of the day, that's the most important thing. And I'm just very fortunate to be the steward of it now.
Nice. That's a great attitude. Now, obviously, Sanford's owned by Terlato Wines International these days. How long ago did they buy into it?
In 2002, they became partners and became the sales and marketing arm. And then over a few years, their interest grew. And then they took over management in 2005.
Nice. So let's talk a little bit about your history. I always ask this question, and it's just, was there that moment, or were you raised in a wine-growing family? I guess first thing first, are you from California? Or
I am. I was born in Florida, but I grew up in Northern California. So for me, it really was it was a combination of things, but there sort of was not exactly a moment, but a brief period of time where certain factors came together pretty dramatically. I didn't have a wine background from a family standpoint, but my grandfather on my dad's side was a plant breeder and spent most of his life crossbreeding grapevines throughout the subtropics and then most of his life in Florida trying to breed resistance with vinifera vines because he was always sort of baffled but frustrated why you could not grow vinifera vines successfully in the Southeast. There had been this period of boom and bust cycle where people would plant vinifera vines, be it table or wine grapes, and they would do okay for a number of years, and then the vineyards would die. And, you know, southeast with rain in the summer, it's a more challenging place to grow vinifera no matter what. But I think the big thing was Pierce's disease, which is one of the few acutely fatal diseases of grapevines. And so he spent most of his life crossbreeding Native American vines that grow wildly and thrive throughout the southeast, and vinifera vines. So it was something that was always interesting to me. I went to school in as an undergraduate at UC Santa Barbara, studied geology and geography. Was always interested in science, primarily earth sciences. Besides my grandfather's influence, I had a summer job in agriculture. I used to work for Heinz, the ketchup folks. I worked for their ag research division. And then being in Santa Barbara, I started tasting wines, visiting local wineries, and you know, started really looking into the process. And you know, I started thinking, wait a minute, combination of agriculture, science. You know, I love wine, and my interest in wine was growing rapidly. And I also thought that, well, without fail, every single great wine region in the world is also a beautiful place. So I started thinking that there could be something to it. So I looked into it, took a winemaking class at a junior college, you know, did a little due diligence, kind of helped out, volunteered at a few wineries, and then went to UC Davis for grad school. So, and then worked in Napa in Australia. Had really good background from several wineries, and had the amazing luck almost 7.5 years ago to go back to Santa Barbara County and to look after one of the wineries that first inspired me.
Two of the greatest wine regions in California between Napa and Santa Barbara. I mean, you've really had a great opportunity.
I have, and they're very distinctly different. And they grow, I think, different varieties very well. But in terms of climate and culture and everything, they're truly different, and it's been a nice contrast.
Is it fair to say the Santa Barbara area to some degree has retained a bit more of its the more farm-like feel to it, I guess I'd say?
Oh, absolutely. It's much more diverse agriculturally. In fact, wine grapes as a commercial crop are not only not the number one, they're the number three. It goes. Strawberries have been number one for some time. Broccoli's actually been number two, and wine grapes are number three. If you factor in, you know, value added from wine production, it would be the number one, but just as a variety, as a crop, grapes are down there. And then there's a lot of other things from broccoli, cauliflower, cut flowers. There's beautiful marigold fields, and it's definitely not just vineyard after vineyard. And I think in the end, it makes for a healthier agricultural environment because we don't have a monoculture. Mm. And it might be one reason we haven't had some of the pressures. We haven't had as much of a Pierce's disease pressure. We haven't had phylloxera issues. In fact, we have old vines on their own roots.
Really?
Huh. Yes.
So you've never had really the infestation that Napa dealt with, or Sonoma, with phylloxera?
Not yet.
Yeah.
Knock on the little table.
No kidding. Yeah, exactly. There's no wood handy. Is that a climate issue then because of this completely different climate you got going on and the colder air? I mean, is that possibly what it is?
I think it's a bit of a it's some speculation, but I think our sandier soils, I think, are a factor. Phylloxera tends to like more loam and clay soils. I think our growing season's a little cooler, and I don't think they quite have the same reproductive life cycle. And then just the fact that the vineyards aren't as concentrated. I think, you know, what little phylloxera might be there hasn't been, you know, propagated vineyard to vineyard.
Good for you.
Yes.
It's got to make your life a heck of a lot easier.
It is. And, you know, for newer vineyards, including La Rinconada planted in 97, you know, we've planted on rootstock because, you know, there's a lot invested. And, you know, if you get everything right, you hope a vineyard can be productive for many, many decades. And, you know, we can't control everything. Mm. So, you know, planting on own roots right now, I think we see as a little bit too risky. Mm. But we're thrilled that we've got these amazing old vines still on their own roots.
Yeah, that's fabulous. When you're talking about your grandfather, did he operate a nursery, or was strictly what he was doing was the science of it?
Well, he had a little test vineyards. He actually spent the first half of his life working for the government. He headed research stations throughout the subtropics. I mean, he was in South Florida, he was in Puerto Rico, he was in Costa Rica for years, you know, working on lots of different crops, just trying to improve food production largely. But, you know, the challenge of growing vinifera vines in these climates was something that formulated in him pretty early on, and it was something he wanted to pursue. So in the early 40s, he moved back to Florida and started this largely self-funded. He had some grants, but a lot of, you know, he had other businesses on the side to kind of keep his research going, and did, you know, he collected vines throughout the you know, Everglades and throughout some of the subtropics, and made you know, made crosses with vinifera vines.
And they are growing grapes in Florida now.
They are still mostly hybrids, but he, you know, he had some fairly successful crosses, and you know, he didn't live long enough to see the ultimate results, but fortunately his more successful materials have all been taken cuttings of and are now propagated at in Davis, so that research can continue.
There's no question you had it in your blood.
Yeah, to an extent. I kind of wish, my grandfather passed away in 1990, and my dad has said repeatedly that he thinks he would have gotten quite a kick out of the fact that I pursued at least grapes and wine in some regard.
He would have been thrilled, because you're almost in your own way carrying on a little bit. That's a very, very unique story. I like that a lot, because that's part of family, which is such a big part of wine anyway. There's always that connection, isn't there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, at Sanford, we've got some different but equally interesting connections where, you know, I've got this amazing vineyard crew and cellar crew that has a long, long history. In fact, our cellar master, a young man named Augie Rodriguez, is going on his 27th year at the winery. And he still works incredibly hard and lives every day with passion. And his father was actually, the first employee of Sanford and Benedict. And he literally grew up on the property. I mean, he moved to Mexico, from Mexico, rather, when he was a very, very young man. But he grew up on the vineyard. And so that's really in his blood. And he has a younger brother, or sorry, an older brother who works in the cellar, who's been with us, I think, for maybe 18 years, and his brother-in-law is with the team. So it's, you know, it's very much a little family operation.
Well, I think that's, again, part of the thing. Many wineries are family-owned, but many winery crews are families themselves. And it's not unusual to hear these stories of people who've been with vineyards for an awfully long time, because they really grow with the vines.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think once you really fall in love with a place and a site like that, it's just, you know, the last thing you want to leave. And, you know, every year you look forward to the best vintage ever. And, you know, it's something that I've enjoyed over the years. And I think I'll continue doing this as long as my olfactory senses still work. I think at some point, maybe when I lose my sense of smell, they'll push me out. But till that happens, I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
This is the end of part one of our interview with Steve Fennell. Download part two from lifebetweenthevines.com or from iTunes.